through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, one of my favorite people, one of your favorite people. He covers the Seahawks for the Seattle Times. It's Bob Condotta. Bob, how's it going?
Good, Stacy. Hey, yeah, how you guys doing?
We're good. We're excited, obviously, coming off a Mariners win. But I wanted to talk about Seahawks OTAs with you. You were there at practice. And, Bob, I have to start by telling you that I was not there. Practice is during our show. So there was a question that I got in our Seahawks Q&A from a ton of people. I did not know how to answer it. And I'm now handing it off to you to make you do my job. Thanks in advance, which is, was Chris Carson there? And what's the latest on Carson?
No, he was not. He's not going to – I don't think he's going to be on the field during any of this stuff. And I don't know if there's any latest. It was, you know, we didn't get to talk to Pete Carroll yesterday, and I don't know if we'll get to talk to him until they do their mandatory minicamp next week. And that's worth noting because if we're going to see him, maybe we'll see him then. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we'd see him around. But you often don't see the injured players during these things. You know, some of them come out and they stand around and you see them. But you know, he's still – just kind of in rehab mode from the neck surgery he had. And at the moment, I don't know if there's a latest really, other than they're just sort of monitoring that. I mean, maybe there's a decision for them to make before training camp. You know, when Pete Carroll talked about this at length at the league meetings and all that, you know, he just said that this was probably something they were going to have to wait until training camp began. And they put some pads on and maybe saw and could see where he was. And I don't know if there's an urgency for them to make a decision prior to that, but you know, who knows, maybe there is. Pete did say last week that he was going to be around in the building, and that we're not in the building really, so we don't, you know, we don't get to see guys from that standpoint. And you know, and maybe they'd know more, but if there's more to know yet from that, I haven't seen it or heard it.
You know, Bob, last time we talked, the Seahawks were talking about how they were going to limit the 11-on-11 drills in action. Have they cranked that up this week, and if so, what does that look like?
No, the OTA we saw yesterday was the exact same format as last week's, and I think that's how it's going to be. They'll have another open OTA we'll see on Thursday, and then the mini camp is next week, and maybe the mini camp will be a little more intensive that way. But my understanding is they're just sort of really trying to, you know, body preservation and not get guys hurt right now and things like that. And, you know, so that's why, you know, as Clint Hurt mentioned yesterday, most of the veteran defensive linemen we're not seeing out there right now. So Al Woods and Kuna Ford and Shelby Harris and Clinton Jefferson, Alton Robinson as well. None of those guys are out there on the field right now. Some of them, I know Kuna's been around, but, you know, none of those guys were on the field yesterday. And Clint just said, you know, it's kind of just taking care of their bodies right now. So I think with positions where they know that, you know, they know who the guy's going to be once training camp starts, they don't need them kind of wearing themselves out right now. And I think they feel that way about the team a little bit. I think it's a really big time right now to sort of teach everything. And so you know, the 11-on-11 session we did see, you know, was kind of a pretty rapid walkthrough pace. I wouldn't call it necessarily completely full speed, you know, the emphasis is more on teaching what they want to get done, I think, more so than kind of seeing where guys are at physically necessarily.
Bob, in pass catching situations, who has really stood outside of Tyler Lockett? You know, we're trying to find who the next guy is going to be, whether that's going to be from the receiving core or whether that's from the tight end group. Has anybody stood out to you as you've watched them?
Yeah, I mean, we got to see Noah Fant for the first time yesterday because he wasn't there last week, and he definitely stood out, made a couple of really nice catches, one in particular from Geno Smith on kind of a seam route down the middle. It's always important to note that, you know, the defenders are sort of not supposed to make plays on the ball. So, you know, this is sort of designed for receivers to look good. They can kind of lead for catches and stuff and know they're not going to get hit and all that. But, you know, you definitely noticed him. And, you know, I think he's going to be obviously, I mean, it's an obvious point that they expect him to be a big part of their passing game when he caught, I think, 68 catches last year, which would have been one of the best seasons for a tight end in Seahawks history. And then the other guy is the Eskridge. And, you know, it's easy to forget that not only did he get hurt in the first game last year, but he didn't really do a lot in the offseason program and in training camp last year because he was dealing with a toe injury. If I recall, I don't think he really started practicing until mid-August. So, you know, he was sort of behind from the start last year. But, you know, this year we're seeing him out there. And you know, again, it's they're not necessarily winning a lot of battles with corners because they're not, you know, the corners aren't necessarily trying to, you know, beat him up or anything like that. But, you know, you're definitely just kind of noticing him making some catches. And the speed for sure kind of stands out, you know, when they get the ball to him and all that. So, you know, right now I think that's one of the most positive signs from the offense that I've seen.
Bob, one of your articles up on the Seattle Times looks at the breakout or Seahawks hoping for breakout years from Eskridge, who we just talked about. Also defensive end LJ Collier. Can you talk to us a bit about how Collier's looked? And importantly, is he taking on any kind of new role in this new defense?
Yeah, and it is interesting that he is out there. So, you know, obviously he's not really a veteran, I guess, going into his fourth year, but certainly they want to see him go through all this right now. You know, I know there's a feeling around the team that the move to a 3-4 could really benefit him. You know, I think as sort of a 4-3 end on the side of attack, you know, kind of trying to be an edge rusher, I don't think that's his game, but I think they do think his game could be kind of the inside pass rush, especially in the nickel. Pete Carroll talked about that last week. You know, I think they feel like that could be a really big role for him. And so, you know, he could play an end and he could be one of the ends in the 3-4 in the base defense. And then when they go to their nickel, you know, maybe move inside even more and get matched up against guards and things like that. Clint Hurt talked yesterday about how, you know, he's in the best shape of his life and all that. And you hear that about a lot of guys this time of year. This is sort of when you hear that. But certainly for LJ, you know, I think he knows the urgency here. They, you know, nobody thought they would pick up his option, but they didn't do it. And so he's going into what's the last year on his rookie deal now. And so, you know, this is a real prove it year for him, not just for maybe staying with the Seahawks, but, you know, for the NFL in general, kind of showing the entire league that, you know, he was worthy of that draft standing. And, you know, I know there was some speculation maybe he could be a guy that they cut or something like that in the offseason. But again, my understanding is they really feel like this move to the 3-4 could really benefit him. And he's a guy they're really counting on this year.
Now, Bob, you know, one of the things that Stacy and I have discussed is, you know, the Seahawks needing to lay down the foundation this year and not necessarily be overly concerned with wins and losses. But if, to you, we were talking about, you know, the running game and the defense. Both things are incredibly important to Pete Carroll's philosophy. In your opinion, which one would you rather see the most happen? If you could pick one, you would be comfortable with this team and the way it's moving forward if the run game takes off or if the defense takes off?
Well, of those two things, I'd say the defense. I think it's a much bigger year to get that, to get to show some real improvement there with the changes they made on the coaching staff. You know, they really went about this offseason trying to tailor their personnel to what they're going to do now. And that's why you didn't see guys like Kerry Hyder. You know, you saw Kerry Hyder released and some of the moves they made with some of the other guys there. You know, they really like, the young linebackers, obviously, we talked about them a lot, but Jordan Brooks and Cody Barton, and see them make that step and prove that they can be that, you know, what they've done with the ends. You know, if Darrell Taylor can come through and so he can be an elite pass rusher, you know, not just a good one, which I think he was last year, but take that next step to be a really elite one. And, you know, Uchenna Nwosu, you know, and then obviously they've got a lot of money tied up in their safety duo. And, you know, so having those guys, Quandre Diggs had a really good year last year, but getting Jamal Adams back to being a real impact player, they're really going to need that because they're paying him top of market, you know, for the next few years. You know, logically, it's not a contract they could get out of for a couple of years at least. So, you know, seeing that all come to fruition and see the defense really take a step up. You know, last year they did a good job. You know, they did a better job maybe than people realize in sort of point denial, but they didn't make a lot of plays. And you know, they that's what they need to do is make more of the game-turning plays, be it sacks or creating turnovers. And I think that's what they're really hoping that the switch to doing a lot more 3-4 stuff can make them do.
Hey, Bob, I know that Trey Brown is coming back from a season-ending knee injury, so the cornerback depth is still TBD, and we haven't really seen the entirety of that group out there yet. I'm sure we won't see the bulk of them out until training camp. But that being said, how do you see the depth working? Who do you think is competing for either starting spot right now?
Yeah, well, the starters right now are Sidney Jones and Artie Burns, who's an interesting guy. You know, first-round pick of the Steelers in 2016. Career sort of meandered there a little bit, but signed with the Bears last year, and the last half of the year was perceived to play pretty well. Started against the Seahawks, if you recall, had a couple of pass defenses in that game that the Bears won here, and then he's, you know, came over with, you know, was coached there by Sean Desai. He's now leading up the Seahawks secondary, you know, one of the two guys anyway that they brought in to really kind of revamp the secondary. So he's one of the other starters right now. And then Justin Coleman is starting at the nickel spot. We're seeing Ugo Amadi basically run with the starters at safety right now with Jamal and Quandre out. So it'll be interesting to see where Ugo fits into there as well. But I think he's definitely got a role as at least sort of a backup and rotational guy, if nothing else. And then the two rookies yesterday were running with the second team, Kobe Bryant and Tariq Woolen. You know, of those two, I think Kobe Bryant's a lot further along in terms of being a guy that maybe would legitimately compete for playing time. Yeah. But Woolen's really interesting because if he shows anything, he's a guy they're going to have to keep on the 53 because I don't think you could risk cutting him and try, you know, waiving him and putting him through waivers and having him potentially claim. So, you know, it's an interesting thing that way. You know, how many corners will they end up keeping from that standpoint if you usually keep no more than five? Yeah. But that might be your five right there, Trey and then Artie and Sidney Jones and Justin Coleman, and then the two rookies. How that all shakes out will be interesting to watch. But that's sort of how it looks right now, and so it's definitely an interesting group that way.
So where's Marquise Blair kind of filling in? Is it like as a backup safety? I'm assuming maybe he's no longer competing with Coleman for nickel.
I mean, right now we're not seeing him out there. You know, he's another guy coming off an injury, so he's not out there, and it will be interesting to see where he does slot in there, if it has backup safety depth or if it's competing with the nickel spot. You know, re-signing Justin Coleman and putting him in the nickel does really, you know, I don't think they brought Coleman in to be a backup, you know, at this stage of his career. So it will be really interesting to see how that shakes out with those guys. And is it something where, you know, if you're trying to figure out ways to use Jamal Adams differently, and maybe sometimes you have three safeties on the field, you know, three guys who are classified as safeties anyway, on the field a lot, and if you're using Jamal in a different role that way, and so then you sort of have two guys in your traditional safety spots if you know, Marquise or Ugo Amadi or guys that slot into that. So, but I think with Marquise right now, the big thing is just getting healthy. You know, he's had a couple of really significant knee injuries here, unfortunately, and so I think before we talk too much about what Marquise Blair is going to do on the field, I think they just need to get him healthy and kind of get him back and, you know, kind of take that step first.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it's a good point, Bob. Now, one of the big themes that we are going to continue to keep hearing throughout the offseason, I'm sure, and developing through the season, is this conversation of leadership. It was interesting to listen to a couple sound bites from some of the players and from Clint Hurd himself about how important that leadership is going to be for this team and how it will evolve. What stood out to you when hearing some of the players and Clint Hurd talk about leadership?
Yeah, I mean, it really is, you know, for those of us who've, you know, I started coming to the team in 2013, and this is the most significant shift in leadership that there's been, you know, without Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner. Russell, obviously, the offensive team captain ever since, you know, that 2013 season, and Bobby, one of the team captains, if not the sole team captain, most of that time on the defensive side. And, you know, with both those guys gone, it's obvious, and, you know, and no clear, usually your quarterback, you know, is the leader on the offensive side, but you don't really have a clear quarterback at the moment. So you need that coming from other people. You know, so Tyler Lockett's sort of the most veteran guy right now. And I think he's somebody who's really doing that on the offensive side. I think DK Metcalf will once he gets back, on the field and during training camp. But defensively, you know, I think it'll fall largely to guys like Quandre Dix and Jamal Adams once they're back out there. And then Jordan Brooks, just by the role he's going to have, you know, as that defensive play caller, taking over Bobby's role doing that, you know, that falls on that guy sort of no matter what. You know, when you're the guy who's talking all the time during the game, you're going to have to take on that role more off the field as well. And so I think he's the guy who's really going to do that. You know, defense on the line, you know, they do have a lot of strong veteran personalities there. And again, once all these guys come back, but guys like Al Woods and Clinton Jefferson in particular, I think Shelby Harris has a real, you know, from my understanding of him as well, as he's sort of a real kind of vocal presence on the teams he's been on in the past. So I think it's going to be much more of a mix of guys, and it will be interesting to see how that comes together because it's, you know, it's going to be so different than what we've seen for so many years.
He is Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times. He was at OTAs yesterday, and you can read his takeaways at seattletimes.com/sports. Bob, thanks so much for taking the time.
Okay, thanks a lot, you guys. Yep, anytime.
Thanks, Bob.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, what personality trait does new defensive coordinator Clint Hurt possess that's exactly what the doctor ordered for the Seahawks?
Well, I would listen to Daryl Taylor here in Cut 19 talking about Clint Hurt specifically and what he has been able to do with his personality that has helped this team and the players so far learn this playbook and set the standard.
I think his assertiveness as a coach, you know, and how he is as a person, you know, for, you know, just roll over into his coaching. And I think every day he's making us better. He's holding us accountable. You know, he's asking us to do things, asking us to get out of our comfort zone and make us better players. So I think his coaching style is great for our defense, and it's going to make us better as we head into the season.
So when you hear that assertiveness, when you hear that he takes that approach with this team and it leads to accountability, why? Well, just as assertiveness in nature, Stacey, being able to tell someone like it is such a key component in coaching. Some of the best coaches that I ever had, Stacey, were truth tellers. Not feel-good guys, truth tellers.
Honest guys.
Honest guys that would tell you straight up to your face whether you're doing a good job or not. And not beating around the bush. And now you know, okay, here's what I need to work on. Here's what you want from me, and here's what I can do to obtain those goals. And I think having someone like Clint Hurt, who isn't worried about trying to be everyone's best friend and be buddy-buddy with everybody, I think there's an element of that he has captured the respect of everyone around him up to this point. Well, still, he still has to earn that fully as a play caller live in games. But up to this point, I think that there really has been a good standard that has been set that, hey, we are going to teach you at an extremely high level. We're bringing in great teachers. Clint Hurt, Sean Desai, Carl Scott, guys that can teach it at the highest level. And we're also going to hold you to that standard. We're not going to wait until the middle of the season to have the great accountability meeting that was so famous in 2020. No, we're not doing that. We're doing it from day one. We're setting the standard. We're setting the culture. And I'm going to tell you to your face whether or not you're meeting that standard every single day. And it's the same standard for a veteran player like Quandre Diggs or Al Woods as it is for someone like Daryl Taylor, Boye Mafe, or Kobe Bryant. It doesn't matter. And I think that that level of communication and that understanding and that leadership is what is desperately needed here for this defense. And hopefully that will be exactly what the doctor ordered in order for this team to take the next step.
Second down. What Seahawks first round pick has made a strong impression this OTAs?
Well, Bob Condotta on with us not that long ago alluded to it. But, hey, we've got the body show. We've got a conversation about
Brock
who showed up
it.
In the best shape. And we've got it right
best
here.
Best shape of his life.
Cut 28. Let's go.
Continued growth that he's showing now. You know, sometimes for young guys, particularly with defensive linemen, it's such a technical position. It takes time, you know. It takes time for those guys to learn things, to figure it out, to come into their man body coming into this league, and for things to kind of slow down a little bit for him. So he has had one of the, out of the entire group of guys on defense, he's had one of the better springs out of everyone. So really excited for him and where he's going. Continue to be strong in the run game. He's came in bigger and stronger and faster than what he has been in previous years. Been rushing the passer really well. So just want to see him continue to stack days.
And who is that? LJ Collier, former first-round pick. Now, LJ coming in and Clint Hurt giving that rave review of how he's come in better shape, realizes that this is a very important year for him to be able to showcase his talents and what he is capable of doing. We'll see how he fits into the overall depth chart of this Seahawks defensive line rotation, but that would be a welcomed addition to this defensive line. If in this 3-4 scheme it fits LJ Collier better, you get more out of LJ Collier than you ever have up to this point, which unfortunately has not been much. And that has obviously been one of the, you know, black eyes of the organization in terms of draft picks. But if LJ Collier can redeem himself this year, much like Rashad Penny was able to do last year, you put yourself in a position where you continue to keep stacking more depth onto your defensive line, which is so incredibly important if this defense is going to lead this team this season.
Third down. What beautiful thing did safety Ryan Neal address that can help bring the best out of younger Seahawks players?
What I would say is that when you're talking about Ryan Neal and looking around and seeing the differences, right? I mean, he saw what it was like with Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright and Russell Wilson here leading this team. It's got to be really, really different walking into this offseason. And here in cut number 22, I think Ryan Neal gave a pretty honest answer.
It's funny, man. You know, my OGs, they know I got all nothing but love for them. And, you know, change is a thing that's always inevitable. And, you know, you miss them a lot. But at the end of the day, it's a new season. It's a new team. And you got to find that new identity. And new leaders got to emerge. And that's the beautiful thing about what we got going on now is that those leaders are starting to emerge in their own way. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be forced, and it's all organic. And that's the thing that you love about this, man. We got a group of dudes, young, and we all trying to find out what we're trying to find out. We're trying to find our mission together. So the quicker we find that, the faster we can move along.
Now, as Ryan Neal said, it's a beautiful thing to watch how other guys are not now trying to step up and fill that void with KJ Wright, Bobby Wagner, and Russell Wilson, and that it's a difficult thing to do. However, sometimes when you're starting this new brand and you're starting a new era, finding that identity together, it can work together extremely well if everyone feels some level of ownership and accountability to that. And instead of looking to the names I had mentioned, Stacey, and saying, oh, they got that, they'll take care of that. All the leadership stuff and having to step up and hold people accountable and doing this and that, that's their job. They'll do it. I'm good. No, now everybody has to step up. Everybody has to take some form of accountability. Everyone has to take some ownership in not only owning their assignment, but also contributing to developing the new culture, the new standard that this organization wants to set with this young group of guys. It reminds me, and hopefully it'll turn out similarly, to when the Legion of Boom was you know, put together and fostered, that all these guys, it wasn't just one player, Stacey. It wasn't just Cam Chancellor. It wasn't just Michael Bennett. There were a handful of guys. Handful of guys that took ownership and really established themselves as strong leaders. And instead of having, you know, one or two or three main leaders, hopefully what is born out of this is that you have leadership that is all across the board with this young team, and everyone feels some ownership and accountability in this thing. And I think Pete Carroll will do an excellent job in fostering that culture. And now it's going to be a matter of how quickly they can put and gel all that together.
Fourth down. I always like to make fourth down kind of fun and also tie it to the timeline. So here we go. You have to choose a current or former NFL player to be commissioner of your fantasy football league. Who is it and why?
Current or former commissioner.
See, you don't play a lot of fantasy football, so I don't know that you know what a good commissioner needs to have.
What traits does a good commissioner,
so I actually think
fantasy
we have a,
football commissioner,
yeah,
need to have?
So I actually think we have
I need
a good
you guys to help me out here.
We've had the same commissioner for my fantasy football league for like, oh my God, like 5 or 6 years. I think he's a very calm, cool, collected dude who knows the rules, and also I don't think he's afraid to be a little direct about, you know, like, dues or whatever. Like, he's not he's not trying to be anyone's very best friend.
Okay. Curtis, would you agree with that?
You have a good commissioner in your league. You play fantasy baseball, too.
I do play fantasy baseball. I don't believe I've ever met the commissioner of my league.
Really?
Like,
wow, he's a big celebrity.
Yeah. No. Yeah. He's shrouded in mystery.
Shrouded in mystery?
Commissioner X is what we call him. No. Yeah, I'm in a good fantasy baseball league. A good commissioner is able to retain most of the league, too, from year to year.
Okay.
Of course, you got a couple of stragglers, people who don't want to. But I think a good commissioner also puts a lot of the big decisions in the league up to a vote, rather than just, is like, no, I'm ruling with an iron fist, this is how it goes, because you're going to rub a lot of people the wrong way.
Yes, yeah, you are. So, all right.
So who are you going to
choose? You need someone
calm,
that is
calm, cool, collected, not afraid to hurt feelings,
but
like
chill,
a respected guy.
Chill and likable.
Yes.
Okay, that's what's standing
yep,
out
yep,
to
yep,
me.
Yep,
chill
yep, yep,
and likable and is going to enforce the rules. So someone that I think could do a great job, I'm going to give you two names.
Quickly.
Travis Kelce, David Bakhtiari. I think
I'll
those two guys. I think just in terms of dynamic personalities, I think that they could do well. Oh, as I'm thinking about, George Kittle would be excellent. He would be an excellent commissioner.
All right, I'll allow it. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Tommy Pham found himself in hot water after slapping Jock Peterson during a dispute that stemmed from a fantasy football league, and he's now blaming the commissioner. He's mostly joking, I think, but he is calling out this MLB superstar. I'll tell you who it is next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This hour of Jake and Stacey's brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. It is The Timeline, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines. And this one stems from a story yesterday. As you guys already know, I'll run you through it very quickly because today's story is actually just an update, a follow-up. Tommy Pham, Cincinnati Reds outfielder, was suspended after slapping Jock Peterson across the face. Now, this happened during, what was it, BP. It was before game started.
Saturday.
And a couple reporters saw it, so they tweeted it out. And at first, people were like, I'm sorry, Tommy Pham slapped Jock Peterson across the face. Beg pardon, what happened?
Yeah.
And then we all found out that it stemmed from some fantasy football stuff, but it had layers to it. Jock Peterson in an interview said, well, you know, I had a guy, Jeff Wilson. I love naming the players. I had a guy, Jeff Wilson, who was injured and he was out. And so I put him on IR and I was accused of stashing players on my bench to cheat. And it's I'm assuming a big money league with some professional athletes in there.
Uh-huh.
Tommy Pham says, well, look, I mean, there's some skirting of the rules here by Jock Peterson, but also more importantly, alleges that Jock Peterson wasn't super respectful when he was confronted about it, maybe sending something making fun of the Padres.
It was a nothing
who
burger.
Fam played for at the time. It was stupid. It sounds like one person, Tommy Pham, taking it way too seriously.
Way too seriously. I mean, just like, he looks like a crazy person.
Yes, he does. So here's the latest update. Tommy Pham now blaming the league's commissioner, none other than Michael Trout.
Of course.
Of course. It goes all the way to
the very top.
That's right.
Now, he's joking with this, but he says, Trout did a terrible job, man. He's saying it while laughing. By the way, this interview with the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bobby Nightingale, not Bob Nightingale of USA Today. Yes, but still, it's not Bob Nightingale, in case anyone was. Okay. Trout did terrible job, man. Pham saying this while laughing. Trout is the worst commissioner in fantasy sports because he allowed a lot of stuff to go on, and he could have solved it all. I don't want to be the commissioner. I've got other stuff to do. Trout didn't want to do it. We put it on him, so it's kind of our fault, too, because we made him commissioner. I like the idea of them being like, Mike, you got this? Thanks, buddy.
Like, what?
I don't want to be. Imagine being league commissioner on top of whatever you're doing.
Yes.
I mean, granted, you're not in season. For a month you are, but there's a slight overlap, but not too
right.
much of one.
But also being in a position where you have a crazy person like Tommy Pham who's taking everything so seriously.
Yeah, who let Tommy into the league?
Yeah, like seriously, who let this guy in the league?
Everyone,
and I guarantee
let me
you
say, everyone that, has that person in their fantasy league.
But is Tommy
everyone
Pham going to be let
person.
Back into the league?
Oh, God,
no.
No.
The person in
absolutely
our league that was
not.
Like that, that constantly had an issue with things, that was constantly starting fights, took everything a little too seriously, left the chat.
Good. Good. I'm glad that happened for you.
To that guy, if he's listening, he's a great guy. Cool dude. It's just everyone has
sure,
that guy in
sure,
their
sure,
fantasy
sure.
league that takes it just a little too
seriously. I envision Mike Trout being somebody that's just like, either he does not care at all. He's
like dude,
look,
I
just tried
to deal with
I just
this.
Tried to yeah. put this thing together, yeah. and or secondly, Mike Trout's going around and be like, hey, don't do that, don't do that. No,
no
one really cares.
No.
Yeah, no, and everybody's like, come on. Come on, Mike, shut up. You're not going to do anything about it.
Well, I mean, now maybe he was actually a great commissioner. And the problem is that Tommy Pham, am I wrong? Am I using IR the wrong way? I thought it was totally fair game if a player is out and he is injured to put him on IR.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Right? What rules? Tommy Pham's like playing by NFL rules. here.
Yeah, what do you mean you have to release the player if they get put on IR? That makes no sense.
What do you want to, like, put them through waivers here, Tommy? What are you doing?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, you guys know about this infinitely more than me. All I know is I tried to do
you,
it.
I think Tommy
I tried
Gamm
to do
wrong.
It 1 year. I tried to do it 1 year, and I about lost my mind.
I'd love to hear Maura's take on this because she is
Maura's a fantasy
football junkie.
We'll have to text her in the group. And
who are you siding with?
And say who's in the wrong
who's
and who's
out
in
of
the
line.
Right. Yeah.
I think Tommy Pham is more out of line.
I agree. Next story here in the timeline. For the first time since 2000, the late John Madden will grace the cover of the Madden video game franchise, Madden NFL 2023, at a highly anticipated release, just as it does every single year. Everyone was waiting to see who the cover star was and who more fitting than the late Hall of Fame coach who passed in late December of last year.
Now, you talk about honoring a legend, this is the least that they could do, right? The least that they could do. And honestly, I'm hats off to them for doing this. And you know, John Madden, as we talked about, you know, this year with his passing, how much he meant to the game, how much he meant to the NFL in terms of engagement and growing the game to what it is today. I mean, honestly, he is a huge, huge reason why the game has the popularity that it does. And I think that John Madden is going to be missed, but his legacy will live on. And it has made this game infinitely better for the fan. And I think that is the impact and legacy that John Madden leaves, and that everyone is trying to fill his shoes, right? Like, you talk about Tom Brady, you know, being an analyst and all those types of things. I hope that it's not just about collecting a check to these guys, because obviously the name and the brand and everything is so big, and you know, there's intrigue and all that. But do these guys take the same level of pride in teaching the game and trying to help everyone understand the game like John Madden? He's one of one, but do they take that same level of pride in it?
It's
That's what I hope.
I agree. It's partly that, but it's also partly that there was an authenticity to John Madden that I think is really, really hard to replicate with just the way that society is now. It's not a personal flaw with anyone. It's just that with the way that we all grow up with social media, with being in very public and forward-facing no matter who you are, it just feels like authenticity is harder to produce, which in itself sounds inauthentic, but it is, I think, rare to see people who are very authentic.
Yes.
By the way, did you guys watch All Madden when that came out? Shortly after, that was wonderful.
Incredible documentary.
It was so good. If you haven't seen it, I recommend it. I'm sure it's available on ESPN Plus.
Yes, it's on. I believe it's on.
Where's it? Fox.
It's like it's on both. I believe.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. They did a re-airing because it was going to be completely unrelated to that. And then they did a special re-airing of it, or maybe streamed it before they were initially going to. I don't know what it was, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was wonderfully done. Just a beautiful documentary. It's only 90 minutes. Quick watch, but well worth your time. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. So, like I already told you guys, at the 45s today, with the exception of 145, we're going to be talking about your Seahawks Q&As. I asked you guys to submit some questions about this team. If you missed at 1045, we went over the question, what should the Seahawks expect as a successful season? What does success look like in 2022? That was the 1045 question. Now we're turning to some specific position battles. Your Seahawks Q&A coming up in just a couple minutes. Is Geno Smith really QB1? Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners continue their road trip today. Robbie Ray gets the start for Game 2 against Baltimore. First pitch is at 4:05 p.m. Pregame show starts at 3 p.m. right here on Seattle Sports Station. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company. Mariners outfielder Taylor Trammell joining us in less than 15 minutes. Before we get to that, though, another one of your Seahawks Q&As. Earlier in the show at 1045, we're answering these at the 45s, we were asked, what does success look like in 2022 for the Seahawks? To listen to that, you can listen to the end of hour one of the Jake and Stacey podcast. But we're moving on to a new question. This one from at Tom Slaughter 2, or Tom's Laughter 2. Is there really a chance Geno Smith is QB1?
Well,
Well, I believe that, yeah, there is a legit chance that Geno Smith is QB1 this year. It's all going to be dependent upon Drew Lock, right? I mean, the hope is that Drew Lock steps up to the challenge and that he is able to mature and grow and learn from his experiences in Denver, and that they're able to tap into the talent that he possesses, because he is incredibly talented, Drew Lock is. And the one thing that I believe was very, critical for Pete Carroll going into this offseason and this transition from Russell Wilson to, all right, this vast unknown of not having a franchise quarterback, is having someone that you're familiar with and you're comfortable with. And that has been Geno Smith. Geno Smith is the guy that they have had experience with. He's been with the team over the last 4 years. He played in three games last year in Russell Wilson's absence. And in his last game against the Jags, he played extremely well. So when you talk about it from that perspective, I mean, Pete Carroll looks at this situation and thinks, I've got a good backup situation. If Drew Lock does not work out, then Geno Smith, I have a lot of confidence in his ability to carry us through this season. Mm-hmm. And you may hear that and you may, you know, think to yourself a number of different things, but that's how Pete Carroll feels. And I think that Geno Smith will most likely have his opportunity to show that Pete Carroll is correct in believing in him and Geno Smith being honestly in the best position that he has been in as a starter in his career.
Number one, Pete Carroll has always had a liking toward players who are familiar with his system, whether it's because they buy into his system or whether it's because he just trusts veterans who know their stuff. He has always had a preference for that. Number two, during a pre-draft press conference shortly following the trade of Russell Wilson, they were asked about their plans at quarterback moving forward. At the time, they had not signed Geno Smith, and Pete Carroll made it very clear, even with an unsigned Geno Smith, so you're giving up a bit of leverage here,
yeah,
that he wanted to have Geno on this roster. He wanted to have Geno back in the mix.
Yes.
Number three, there's always the possibility of a wild card. Maybe the Browns cut Baker Mayfield, and if that happens, I can absolutely see the Seahawks making a move to sign Baker Mayfield. But barring that, Seattle appears very comfortable rolling with Smith in week one if Locke fails to impress. That was what I ended up saying for this, which was, I can absolutely see a world where Geno Smith is your QB1 week one, because the Seahawks are, first of all, higher on Drew Locke than national experts are. They like Drew Locke a lot more than I think national pundits do.
Yes. That's very clear.
It's very clear. They're also clearly hoping that they get the 2019 version of Drew Locke, the one that went 4-1 in five starts. He had a great game to kind of see that version against the Houston Texans, completed 80% of his pass attempts, and had four touchdowns to one interception. But then there's the bad version. And that's the one that the Broncos and their fans saw a lot of over the subsequent 3 years. And it's the one that I think the Seahawks are hoping they can kind of pick Drew Locke up out of, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, get him away from that version. And maybe if they surround him and tap into his rookie season, they can find that version of him again. Now, I have a hard time thinking the Broncos haven't been trying very hard to do that. Now, they've had some trickier quarterback situations where he's had to, like, you know, kind of a step up or shut up moment because there was tougher competition at the time. But I absolutely see this as a world where the Seahawks, should they not feel super confident in Drew, Geno Smith is your QB1.
Yeah, I do believe that they could easily go down that road. Now, the other thing that could throw a wrench into that, as you mentioned, Baker Mayfield, I think the Cleveland Browns are handling the situation extremely poor, to be honest with you, in regards to Baker Mayfield. I think that they should just eat the money and cut him already and move on, but they're not, and I have no idea what to expect from them. The other name that is out there right now that Cam Newton himself is saying teams that are interested in him are the Carolina Panthers and the Seattle Seahawks. So, we'll see what this kind of turns out to be, but Untold Stories episode is going to be crazy, and Cam said that according to Sheena Marie, who is a radio personality,
also a personality on Vanderpump Rules, different people.
From a radio personality on 1340 AM Fox Sports, said that Seattle and Carolina are teams with interest to Cam Newton. So I we'll see how that develops. That makes no sense to me whatsoever. I didn't agree
Cam
with
Cam Newton here.
Yeah, I didn't agree with sense. I didn't agree with it last year. I don't agree with it this year.
Why don't you think Cam Newton makes sense here?
Because he's washed. I'm sorry.
How is
he's washed?
You think that Cam Newton would be significantly worse than Drew Lock?
I think that there is more to gain giving Drew Lock an opportunity than there is with Cam Newton, and I think it's better to give somebody like Geno Smith an opportunity than Cam Newton. Cam Newton has shown you that he, at this point, we're not talking about.
I don't think Cam Newton's your
starter
automatically.
We're not talking about the 2017 or 16 version 15. Of Cam Newton.
Yeah.
15 version, MVP. We're not talking about that version anymore. We're talking about a version of a quarterback who can barely make it through an entire year healthy.
Sure, but
so
that's why
me,
I
that's,
don't think it's a given if he comes here. If you sign Cam Newton, it's still him competing for a spot. It's
sure.
not like we signed him, he's our guy.
Sure, but you could look into that and you could maybe do it. I just don't think that it would be worth your time. I really don't. I think that right now, with what the Seahawks have, I think it's either Baker Mayfield and you take that
I'd
opportunity with
that.
Him, or you stick with Drew Lock and Geno Smith. Because right now, as we've said before, to me, winning isn't the most important thing this year. It's about laying the foundation and allowing your young players to play, allowing them to go through the growing pains, and hopefully through the end of the season that we're looking at a team that has developed their identity, and you see players that have gained confidence and improved their play in the second half of the season. That, to me, is what this season is all about. And if Drew Lock and Geno Smith can be positives and not negatives to the season, that to me is a cherry on top.
It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Mariners outfielder Taylor Trammell joins us next. Don't go anywhere.